Welcome back for one last time to Hoops HD. It is the end of the 2023-2024 season. It's all over. First of all, I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We got John Titel, David Griggs up here with me, Matt Zukowski, and Joby Forza down in the row below us. And UConn won the national championship. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next season.
All right. That's a wrap.
We want to talk a little bit about the Final Four tonight. We'll take a little look, a few other things we want to go over. There's a lot of news going on with coaches and the like, but let's start things off with the Final Four. And I know, let me start off with you, because I know you were there actually in Phoenix for the Final Four. I'll pull the games up here on the screen. What were your thoughts about what you saw there?
I think it was par for the course on many levels in terms of NC State. I saw them win five games in 5 days in D.C. in person, and they looked like the Jim Valvano magic was back, but they ran into a better Purdue team. And I saw Alabama upset Carolina and then beat Clemson and have the nation's scoring offense, and they ran into a juggernaut in UConn. And then we saw the two number one seeds play each other, and the better team won. So even though they didn't have the better player, because Edie was amazing, I'd be surprised if anybody here was surprised by any of the results, because I think the better team won all three games.
I'd agree with you there. I mean, as far as the championship game itself goes, I agree that Edie was the better player, but Joby, Edie looked dominant the first 10 minutes, yeah. And then it looked like he got tired. And what a time to get tired for the first time all season, pretty much.
And that might be that, you know, while he certainly took advantage and dominated Klingon, you know, and when they throw Johnson and Aria, you know, Diarra rather, he did get a little tired, and he went 10 minutes without scoring, the final 10 minutes without the first half without scoring. That was a key component that then set the stage for the second half. He still was the best player on the floor. He's my Final Four MVP, period, even in a losing cause. If you're going to rank the players, though, you're going, well, Edie number one and the starting lineup for UConn two through six.
Pretty much.
And that's why it's a team sport, as it were.
Yeah, and I think that was the other
Castle
problem.
Was amazing. I throughout the time, nothing against Castle. Yeah, you know, not yet. The Castle was amazing, as it was.
Yeah, but Matt, I thought the other problem was that Purdue did not get the outside shooting that they absolutely needed. Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer, I thought, were kind of almost no shows of the championship game.
I suppose, yeah, UConn's guards dominated Purdue's guards, especially out of the defensive end. I think, yeah, the length of the athleticism of Noonan, Spencer, Castle, Diarra. Just gave Purdue's backcourt all sorts of trouble. I don't think they even took double-digit threes, which I think the one way Purdue could have won that game is if they hit 8 or 10 threes. And UConn didn't even let them take them, but let's make them.
And Griggs, back-to-back national championships for the UConn Huskies. Your thoughts on what we have and what we've now had back-to-back NCAA tournaments where every game has been almost a blowout. Maybe the Alabama game in the semifinals was the only close game in the last two seasons that UConn has played.
Yeah, I mean, it is impressive. This happens, what, every 16, 17 years or so. Happened in 06 and 07, happened in 91 and 92. So, you know, like an eclipse, it might be about 16 or 17 years before we see another one. But you're right, and it was – I mean, it kind of reminded me of Florida. I know Butler really made Florida sweat in one of those tournaments. And but in the Final Four and in the national title game both years, blowouts might be overstating it. But at no point really, at least from halftime on, did it feel like UConn was not in complete control. And to get control of Purdue, who was another really strong, definitely – probably the number, you know, of the three heavyweights, they were, I mean, to get control of a team like that, that was probably a lot more, that was their most impressive game in both tournament runs, in my opinion.
Yeah, and while we've seen some very dominant teams in the past at Titel, even when we look at the year that UNLV won the national championship, they were so good. They even had one game they sweated out. We didn't have two straight tournaments where UConn Okay, Alabama's in it a little way into the second half in this national semifinal, and that's it in 2 years.
Yes, and I go back to a point I made on a previous show that I got to attend Hurley's press conference after they destroyed Georgetown a few months ago, and he mentioned how the last two teams to repeat, his brother's Duke team in the early 90s and the Florida teams in the mid 2000s, did so in large part, in Hurley's mind, and I agree, due to the core returning. In the Duke case, Hill, Hurley, Leitner, et cetera. In the Florida case, Noah Horford, et cetera. This was not the case. I mean, Klingon returned and Caravan returned, but Sonogo was gone, Hawkins was gone, Calcaterra was gone, Jackson. Like, in many ways, this was a new team, which gives Hurley all the credit in the world. And I think to expand on that briefly, he deserves his family a ton of credit. I mean, there's been a lot of amazing basketball families. You got the Waltons, you got the Bibbies, et cetera, et cetera. We're talking a Hall of Fame father in Bob Senior, player in Bobby at Duke who won back-to-back titles, a coach now at UConn and Dan who won back-to-back titles, and a player in Dan's son Andrew who just won as a player back-to-back titles. I mean, I don't know if I'm ready to say they are the first family of basketball, but like they're on the short list, Chad.
I guess they are. I mean, and Joby, how
Well,
about that? How about this?
the
Go ahead,
Miles
Greg.
family is, I think, ahead of them just because of Tim Miles by himself.
Okay, Joby. Should we just put UConn in for the national championship again next year? I mean, is that
That's a
it?
very good point. And the early looking ahead line, if you look at like places where out in the desert, so to speak, the folks right now, the thought is that matchup 8 miles apart in North Carolina is the are the early favorites. UConn is certainly up there as close to a favorite, but Duke is the consensus, and North Carolina is getting a lot of love, as well as Arizona. Though we'll see about the transfer situations on all of these, but especially
Okay,
Arizona.
I'm glad you clarified that because for a second I thought you were talking about Wazoo and Idaho being the two favorites.
Or Gonzaga, and yes.
Well, I mean, Matt, UConn was not the consensus number one pick coming into the season for this year. I've got a preseason magazine sitting here from the beginning of the season. They weren't even top 10 in some of these polls heading into the year. I don't know that hey, well, UConn's only looking at the fourth or fifth best team at this point before we've done all the transfer portal means anything to me.
No, although, man, I will say I thought last year from watching the Big East how good Klingon could be, and he showed it, especially once he got healthy this year, just how much of a dominant force he is, especially on defense. That's going to be a little bit tough to replace. I think they'll still be good scoring. I think like Caravan can actually take another step up, assuming he's back. And I think Diarra comes back. And Johnson's a dang good big in his own right, but like that's still Klingon's just a unicorn of like that size that moves that well. And that's just like that. That's how he's. I think he'll play and be a star in the NBA. Whereas Edie, I think will get a chance, but Klingon's the one of the truly big bigs. I think could be generational and almost maybe he might be the one that changes it back a little bit.
The one element that UConn will be losing that I think was essential to their team this year, as much as he drove me nuts, I'm not going to lie, was Spencer. Because he was the glue. He was that. I feel like a lot of times you need that guy who brings it all together. And sometimes it's your best player, but sometimes it's that next level that just, whether it's hustle, whether it's organization on the offensive end, whether it's just the ability to attach yourself defensively to the other team's best player. Spencer played a lot of those Swiss Army knife type roles this year, and it was the grit that kind of brought them together. You first saw it in the North Carolina game earlier this year, and it just continued throughout the year. And sure enough, he had what I think he had like 7 of the first 9 points for UConn in the national title, completely settling that. If there was anything to be settled down from this team, given that for most of them it was their first time, it was settled down after that.
Well, and Griggs, the other thing though is with these UConn players, at least with the way the transfer market works now, when Danny Hurley moves on to take the Kentucky job, they can go with him, right?
Because the year
He's
in
not taking it.
residency
I don't think
still
he's taking
dead.
it, but go ahead.
Now that the transfer year in residency is basically completely dead until this stuff in the courts gets settled, we might see Kentucky in UConn uniforms next year. I don't think he's taking it.
No, but
What would be funny is if we saw Arkansas in Kentucky uniforms and they win the national title. That would make me laugh very, very hard.
let's talk a little bit about that. That is the other big news in college basketball over the course of the past week here is the coaching carousel, everything that's going on, and the biggest group of moves started with when Andy Enfield saw the writing on the wall, left USC for the SMU job. USC turns around, grabs up Musselman for Arkansas, and boom, the hammer dropped Tytel when suddenly John Calipari, who at one point in time had a lifetime contract at Kentucky and he thought he was going to coach until he never didn't want to coach anymore there, he packs up and he goes to Arkansas.
I'm still stunned, frankly. I mean, I know that there's so many factors in terms of the Big Blue Nation not being pleased with the first round exit to Oakland and dollar signs and everything else. I hope it works out for him. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He knows how to coach. I wonder if he can replicate the success in terms of when he brings in a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans every year. That's why he has a contender every year. I assume that he's going to do the same kind of thing, or at least plan to, in Arkansas, but I wonder how it works just because it's one thing to go to Lexington where you have all the history and the everything. Quite another, I think, to do it in Arkansas, but we'll see what happens.
Well, Matt, I kind of my thought here is I think that the transfer portal end of recruiting, I don't think Calipari ever really got there with it. He's still recruiting the one and dones, which is no longer the game, I don't anymore.
I think it's going to shift back the other way in a year or two, especially once the COVID years are done. But you're going to still need a blend of it with that. I mean, I think guys, especially if you're a starter mid-major, those kids, I feel bad for the school, but those kids are all going to be looking for the major school, the NIL payout, and that. So you're going to still have to have a blend of it. But I think the key will be the blend. Like, you're going to have to keep some of your own guys in that. And I think it's like these teams that can be put together all new each year. I don't think that's going to be the total winning formula. So I think it's going to have to be a little bit of blend of get some program guys in, some transfers, some one and dones, and fix that right formula in.
Right.
Well,
Go ahead, Griggs.
part of my question is, I know that there's no denying that Kentucky had struggled in the NCAA tournament, but you look at a few things here. Like the year they were a two seed and St. Peter's beat them, they had won at Auburn. And if you count the number of teams that won true road games against Final Four teams, it was really small. This year I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm actually trying to look it up now. Yeah, I mean they beat Alabama in late February, blew them out of the gym. So was Kentucky, or I'm not saying that there's nothing to it, but did the early tournament exits make us forget, at least this year and then 2 years ago, how good those Kentucky teams really were? Because they were good.
I think you're exactly right, Griggs, and I don't say that lightly for obvious reasons. The
Beat Tennessee, won at Tennessee, who was not a Final
I mean, the
Four team.
fact of the matter is,
Yeah.
this was when we were making our bracket projections in early February. Kentucky was, well, are they going to wear white or not? They're kind of around an eight seed. The way they finished, they were a consensus three. I mean, no one was shocked they're on the three line. They were a consensus three. And some people would even have argued, though I think that they would have been the minority, that they were a two. That's because Calipari put, they started playing D. It's what he often does. He get, the players started to learn to play the defense, and that's always the key. And yeah, we forget because you lose to St. Peter's, you lose to Oakland. That starts to wear on you. And Calipari, and in a place like Kentucky, you do not have much wiggle room. That's the other thing is I still am amazed they fired Tubby Smith when they fired Tubby Smith. So, I
Well,
mean,
he
this is
left.
not,
He
yeah,
actually
well, I
left.
mean, yeah. And Andy Enfield left too. The,
Yeah, same thing.
the you know, I just still, you know, the whole the tub is drained, YouTube, if you remember that. I mean, it's like, it's what you're dealing with there, and you better have thick skin, you better have your bags ready to be packed quickly. But you can succeed because you can still win a national title just as he did, and you can make Final Fours just as he did.
Obviously, the Musselman, Calipari, and whoever's going to come into Kentucky are the big, probably the top stories of all the coaching carousel, Matt. But there's a few other interesting moves that we've seen over the past couple of weeks here for next year, including Dusty May going off to Michigan. And I'd also throw out there this Pat Kelsey to Louisville as a couple of the more interesting moves overall.
Yeah, that's the one that really got my eye on is how Pat, because I think it's going to either go one way or the other. It's either go brilliantly or he's out again in 3 years and Louisville's back at this. I don't see much of an in between on that. But I kind of lean toward it going really well. I think just his energy is coming at the right time. It's still a proud storied program. And then I think he'll get guys that, like, the one argument against Kelsey, he's always done it at top of the level programs. He hasn't had to build up someone like even like Josh Oates did at Indiana State. He's been at Charleston, the top of the whatever conference they're playing in. Winthrop, the
The
top of their
Colonial.
conference. There, so like that's what like those were the best jobs in their league. But still, Louisville's still a really good job, proud institution. Like it's fallen on some hard times now, but I think there's still enough name brand value and that at his energy where he's gonna get guys. Thing is though, if his energy turns out to be a little too over the top, well, it'll go south quickly the other way. But I think he's gonna win big there, and I'm really intrigued to see how it goes.
Yeah, Louisville already has a big transfer coming in from James Madison, Terrence Edwards. For last year, had Terrence Edwards played Louisville 1-on-5, he would have won. So, I mean, I think that him going there is a massive upgrade for them already.
I think the other two moves that really kind of are interesting for me, Chris Holtmann going to DePaul. I mean, I don't know that anybody can save DePaul, but and I see a lot of head shaking here. And Josh Schertz go from Indiana State to St. Louis. St. Louis Griggs is a program that I think could become a good program, and just the whole Travis Ford thing never worked out as good as we thought it would.
Right. St. Louis, as a program, it's one of those that always has me scratching my head, similar to DePaul, although not quite as much. You wonder why it's not so much better than what it is. They've had good teams. When Rick Majerus was there, they actually earned a protected seed 1 year, I want to say. And they take basketball seriously. It means a lot to the fans. They're in a pretty good market. They're in a really good conference. And when you look at sort of Xavier and the Big East schools and Dayton to a degree and other teams around the A-10, why aren't they an A-10 front runner? When you look at their resources and when you look at the buy-in from their fans, like why aren't they better than what they are?
That's the majority of the major moves in the coaching carousel. Obviously, there's going to be when we do our first offseason podcast, we can discuss whatever happens here with Kentucky, and there could be more fallout as more if they're taking somebody that's currently coaching somewhere. A few other things I want to discuss tonight. Tytel, how about the South Carolina women's team undefeated and winning the national championship, beating Caitlin Clark in the finals?
They beat Iowa in the finals, but yes, there have been many media reports. I laugh because this has been on sports radio. I've heard recently that like people said exactly what you said, which you're right. Like, I mean, people are tuning in not to watch Iowa; they're tuning in to watch Caitlin Clark. And I think credit to Dawn Staley. I mean, I know credit to Dawn Staley and her troops because they fell behind a lot early, and then they're like, "Oh, like we're the best team. We're undefeated. Like we can play better," and they did. Camila Cardozo inside, unstoppable. And they had freshmen coming off the bench scoring double digits. Staley, much like Hurley, I think goes from like great coach to like on the short list of legendary coaches with multiple titles. She's not at Gino and Tara and Pat level yet, but she's on her way, frankly, and like I wouldn't bet against her. When you combine her playing career with her coaching career, she also has a very unique historical record resume that puts her on a short list of amazing coaches and player combinations. And South Carolina, I think, is becoming like the dominant team in women's basketball in terms of it's hard to bet against Gino. But I think South Carolina is going to win more titles in Gino's coaching career than he will the rest of his career.
Well, I think Dawn Staley might coach a little longer than Gino, so
She
yeah,
will.
it's a little longer than from here on out. Yeah, I think we should also give a quick shout out here. Matt, Seton Hall won the NIT, which means that they belong in the NCAA tournament. If that's perfect logic, right?
That's what I still I'll maintain. I thought St. John's belonged in above them. I could argue both belonged in. I could argue Indiana State belonged in, but like weird things happened, and the committee took Virginia, and
Yay.
Yeah. Joby, looking back, are you glad they took Virginia with
that
what happened or not? I
was a pleasant Tuesday memory, Joby. Yeah. Hey, a birth is a birth. I'll take it. That team wasn't going. I'm happy for the team, but they weren't going to win the
I
NIT.
like to give a shout at the end of the season to all the teams that won championships. We mentioned last week that Seattle won the CBI, Norfolk State won the CIT. On the women's side, Illinois wins the new WBIT, which is the equivalent of the NIT on the women's side. Well, there is still a WNIT, which has dropped down a tier. That was won by St. Louis. How about the D2 level? Minnesota State with the sweep wins men's and women's championships.
That's and congrats to them. Good, big deal for their program.
At the D3 level, Trine out of Indiana wins the men's title, and NYU takes the women's title. And the NAIA level, Freed Hardeman out of Tennessee takes the men's title, and Dort out of Iowa. I know everyone knows they're the national champions. They're the only national champions out of Iowa. Sorry, Caitlin
I
Clark.
can't
Who
say
won
I've
the
ever.
AC8?
The AC8
Well,
unfortunately got canceled
it
again.
was
We had
canceled.
some issues.
There'll be more on that later, but yeah.
Yeah, well, we actually discovered, well, here's what actually happened, was we discovered that the 3-point line distance was different on both ends of the court, and unlike the NCAA women's tournament, we decided the games just could not be played like that. We canceled it.
Yeah, what was amazing was, again, due to another oversight, it was different on both ends of the court, but we got there and it was only a half court venue.
We had that
So
problem
it was
too.
very bizarre.
I guess on that note, what I want to do is run through each of you here. I know this is a fairly short show, but run through each of you. Or any other thoughts you had on we saw the NCAA tournament, we saw this season. Anything else you want to discuss in terms of a final thought for the entire 2023-2024 season? Matt, why don't I start off this off with you?
Well, I said, unfortunately, this is the last year of the Pac-12, and there goes one of the few major conferences that had a normal or semi-normal amount of teams in it, and now it's basically the Big East in four conglomerates of weird teams that don't belong together and
For
are there
now.
solely because of football money. Yeah,
Yeah, for now.
and that's the Big East now is basically the low normal major conference.
Is that good news or bad news for the Big East? I think it'll be interesting to see these monster conferences next season and how that turns into bids or not bids or what it turns into. But
I think
yeah,
it's just
through all
going to
our
be like
storylines.
placed in even more outsized importance if the Big East does well out of conference. If it does, there you go. That might be seven bids. If it's not so well, this year's three bids might unfortunately be repeated.
Joby, how about you?
Yeah, no, and congratulations once again to the women who had an amazing ratings for the game, around 18 million. Watched the game, and that is measured, by the way, per minute. That's
Yeah,
not 18 million tuning in, it's 18 million per minute, well into
it
the
peaked
20
at
million.
21 million, I think.
Yeah, well into the 21 million, 22 million, watched it, which is the second highest women's sports event ever, only behind the Japan US women's soccer final and World Cup in 2015. Outstanding stuff for the women. And obviously I have a soft spot for Dawn. As Corey Alexander, our commentator for ESPN, says, "I'm not the best point guard ever for Virginia. Dawn Staley is the best point guard ever for Virginia." But one last thing I'll say before the season goes out, I will be putting together a preseason JNG that I hope to get out this week. That will then that and we'll try to accompany it with a bracket
Yes.
that to see what you have, and we'll see if UConn is a one seed or not.
Next season started already. There we
Oh, yes,
go.
it
In fact, our
has.
countdown clock is up. We're only 208 days, 14 hours, and 19 minutes from the start of the next season. Tytel, let me pull a screen share up here for you also.
So many amazing memories from this year, Chad. In terms of the players, Edie went from great player to legend, even though he lost, in my mind, tying Joby favorite Ralph Sampson as the last guy to win back-to-back National Player of the Year awards. Still not sure if he'll make it in the NBA, but you cannot argue his college credentials. Caitlin Clark, I never thought I'd see any man or woman pass Pete Maravich. I was wrong. And then, as far as my own experience, while it sucked to watch my Wildcats lose in person in Los Angeles, finishing off the season on the court, as you can tell, with all the famous people, that's Val Ackerman, former Big East commissioner in the Maroon Blazer, and national champion player up on the podium, the left there. It was an amazing, exhausting, exhilarating experience, which I hope to do a photo essay about in the week ahead once I have a chance to breathe.
All right, Griggs.
I don't know if I can bundle this thought up or not. Joby mentioned the ratings for the women's tournament, and he's absolutely right. It actually outrated the men's Final Four by not a small margin. 14.8 million was the average for the championship game. It was the second lowest ever. If you're wondering what the first lowest ever was, it was last year's, which averaged 14.7 million. Now, it could be that people are just sick of UConn, but I don't think that it's as simple as that. I remember thinking you would, if you'd have ever said that that game would have averaged less than 20 million, you would have been laughed out of the room. It seems like those days of the Duke Butler final getting an enormous viewership are a long ways away. Is the sport declining in popularity? Is the Final Four declining in popularity? But the other thing that's interesting is when you look at the ratings for the first couple rounds, they're not that high, but they tend to get higher and higher every year. And I'm starting to think more and more the major appeal of the tournament, not that this was never appealing before, but what's more appealing now to more people or becoming more appealing is the round of 64 and the round of 32. I don't know. Now, the other thing that's happening is that there's more and more live open streams. Those have not been counted yet. And I figure that the viewership may have been a little more than 14.8 million, but I don't like that. I don't like that the championship game rated that low.
Well,
That's low.
and Joey, you just pointed this out here, but you gotta factor in that every other year it is on TBS on cable, which may detract some numbers. But last year's, which has had low ratings, was on CBS. It
Yeah.
alternates, so
Well, it was
and
lower.
you see it for NFL playoff games as well. A good drop between those games that are on ESPN versus those games that are on hypothetically an NBC or a Fox.
On that note, that pretty much does it for the 2023-2024 season, which means it's time to get ready, as we mentioned already, for the 2024-2025 season. San Antonio is a destination for everybody. The 2025 Final Four. Let's have somebody other than UConn there, please. On
Yeah.
behalf of, go right down below me here, John Tytel, Joby Fortson, Matt Sikowski, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us tonight and all season, everybody. We will be back with a series of off-season podcasts. And in October, we'll be previewing next season. We're not going anywhere. Thanks for
Right.
joining us. Talk to you real soon. And maybe we can even get the thing to stop here. Talk to you again real soon.